You're listening to a Rare Drop podcast. Check us out at raredrop.co.
Well, hello, everyone. My name is Rikari Austin, and I'm one of the hosts of GCX 2022. Now, we want you to join us at Rosen Shingle Creek in Orlando, Florida, as we come together for another unforgettable GCX. Tickets are going fast, and look, we want to see you, so visit gcxevent.com/tickets to book now.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Broman Show, episode 151. I am joined today from Theo at ping.gg. Ping.gg is developing a whole interesting suite of capturing products, live streaming, voice call stuff that is assisting us in the production of this show. It's actually assisted us in the production of the show the past few weeks, and I really like it. So I'm super excited to sit down with Theo today and learn a little bit about what it's like to build a product like this, and you know, how Theo managed to get himself into this whole situation where he has to talk to me. It's terrible. I'm of course kidding. Theo, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you so much for having me. I couldn't be more excited to chat.
Oh, it's going to be, I'm stoked. So I'm always fascinated when people look at like the spectrum of software and capabilities that exist and decide to say, or notice a problem and say, I'm going to develop something for that. It's not like, that's not my skill set at all. I can definitely recognize problems, right? But the having the capacity from a technology side, from a software skill side, to go, oh, I can create a product to service this need, is bonkers to me. So I'd like to start there, if we could. What, you know, how did you manage to acquire the skill set where you're like, oh, I'm just going to build my own little platform to service the broadcasting industry? How did that start?
This is just going to be the origin story, because it, like, the thing I'm most proud of with the way I build is I'm entirely circling around the problems I want to solve, not the technologies I like to use. And it's a mistake I see often, especially in like the software world. Software engineers really like to pick technologies and push them as hard as they can, rather than solve the specific problems that they're seeking out to solve. I only learned to code because I was hosting a Minecraft server to play with my friends, and I had to learn exactly enough code to host the server, get it like online, and then roll back things when my friends were mean and destroyed all my stuff. So I learned Git and the technologies to recover broken code before I actually wrote my first code, because that was the need I had. And then I started learning web tech to run the website for the server. I started learning Java to make plugins and contribute to WorldGuard and Bucket back in the day. But for me, code was means to a goal. And the goal wasn't the code. The goal was always a thing I wanted. And I noticed that that's not how all engineers work. And I think that's like the edge that got me to where I'm at now, is I never cared about the tech as much as I cared about the thing I was doing.
So I love that. So I can't remember the quote or where it came from, but something that's really helped me define the way I approach like my job with strategy at Rare Drop is that a good strategy is always understanding the problem as much as you can first, right? Like a good strategist, or a good, you know, solution or solver of problems. You're never going to have the best answer unless you have like a really holistic understanding of the problem. So what was the problem that you saw and you were like, I'm going to make this ping.gg thing? Like, what was the hole that you were like, that's it?
I think a bit of history will help here too. I went to university both for software and for art. I have a music degree as well as a software degree. I always was more on the music and art side, and I actually joined Twitch on the first creative team at the company. It was formed to move away from the gaming only stance that Twitch had before, where it was like, there's the famous story of Devin Nash playing League of Legends and doing a dance between wins and having his partner manager tell him, hey, you got to cut the dancing out. Twitch is a gaming site, not a dancing site. And I was on the team built to break that trend. And my first job out of school was writing the code that powered Bob Ross, Power Rangers, Pokemon, Mr. Rogers, all the marathons on Twitch. And
Pokemon?
Not Twitch Plays Pokemon, the code for the Pokemon marathon that Twitch ran.
So all the shows that are like You know, when yes. Twitch was like, hey, watch Pokemon with us, watch Bob Ross with us, all that stuff.
Yep.
Shit was amazing. It was a lifesaver.
Yeah, I wish Kevin was here. Two other engineers working our butts off.
I wish Kevin was here because he was like, Bob Ross kept him sane during a couple of marathons, you know, or a couple of GCX events. But yeah, so that's awesome. So you helped produce content that I've been absolutely in love with. So you built cool. this marathon technology internally on Twitch. What's next? What happens after that?
So turns out turning broadcast network, like television's crazy formatted weird assets into a stream isn't a thing that two people are supposed to do. It's actually an industry category called broadcast network technologies. So I outsourced my own job at Twitch to a company called Whirl that now to this day like runs the marathons. I had to like build the endpoints for them to interface with, but at that point it was clear the solution to my problem isn't me convincing the company to hire 15 people. It's almost engineering myself out of this job because it's the cheapest and most sustainable solution for the company. And it was cool because I've always, as I said before, I see technology as means to an end. And when there was a clear end, that meant that my team didn't exist anymore. So I got tossed around the company a bit. I was closest to people on the safety team, so I ended up there for a while. I helped rebuild a lot of the internal safety tools, eventually got to the point where we formed the moderator tools team, and I was the lead engineer who built ModView.
Ooh, I like ModView.
ModView
is very helpful. Whenever something happens in chat as a broadcaster, like whenever something happens in chat, I'm like, oh my God. All these assholes just got banned. What happened? And like, you can go back and figure out like what's like, oh my God, it was like a lifesaver. I'm a big fan of ModView. So you've built a lot of internal technology for Twitch and a lot of internal systems. Fascinating. How long were you at Twitch?
Bit over 4 years, between 4 and 5 years.
Nice.
Yeah. 2017 to 2021. I think that the biggest part of the safety team for me, what was so cool and like the thing I took home from it, was how focused we were on working directly with the people who used what we built. When I was on the internal safety tools team, I was in a Slack room with all of the admins on Twitch who spend 8 to 12 hours a day staring at the webpage that I built that runs all of the reports for when people are doing awful things on Twitch. Their job was so incredibly hard, sitting there staring at the worst imaginable things on the platform. And any work I put in to make their life slightly easier was immediately received well. And the power of that feedback loop and the power of seeing what I was enabling and how much even the little things could help somebody whose life was this was just really powerful. And when we built the mod tools team, I feel like we really channeled that. And all the people on the team were moderators and working with moderators regularly. I was moderating big shows. I was helping with like Rocket League and a few other like speedrunners, not because I understood the content very well, but because I needed to live the experience of being a mod on a big channel and feel those pain points. And that's the same reason I actually became a content creator, not because I was obsessed with the idea of making content or I wanted to make a living on Twitch and YouTube. I care a lot about the medium and I need to understand the pain points if I'm going to build for them.
Yeah. There's a lot of intersections there with what we do, right? Or what we've done at RareDrop over the past couple of years is so many people are like, oh, hey, I'm going to just show up in gaming and I want to fundraise a lot of money. I heard that you are the people that fundraise a lot of money for St. Jude. So just like give us the playbook that you use with them. You know, we'll take two meetings and then we'll raise $5 million. And it's like, you have no context of the platform and why what we're doing works. And if you don't start with the ground floor user experience on Twitch, like in your case, the moderators, you're not going to build a tool or a program or in anything that's going to connect with people. You're going to end up with something that's like almost right. And we know how much gamers love things that are almost right. They're huge fans and no, they hate it. They're not huge fans. So you're a Twitch, you build all these cool tools, 2021 rolls around, and that's when I'm guessing things changed.
Yeah. TLDR, I wanted to focus more on the creator experience, and for various reasons, I'm sure I don't need to rant too much about here. Twitch wasn't investing enough in the creator experience, and it was clear I couldn't build great creator tools there. So I left to do it elsewhere. And I was talking with other startups, helping them build stuff. I was watching a lot of Twitch streams. And I vividly remember I was sitting on the couch watching the Trainwreck's TV Scuffed podcast. And poor Trainwreck was trying to drag all of the names over people because one guest just left. And he had to switch from the seven-person overlay to the six-person overlay, had to move all the names, and forgot to move half of them. And everybody started bullying him for it. I went back and timed the stream, and over a third of the stream, he was adjusting or fixing the layout.
Yeah. That is, I mean, like, my eyes twitching. Just from, oh, my God. That's been such a huge issue, right? Who are you streaming with? And it's like, you can go and you can put all this work in to pre-produce it, but then like somebody's camera dies, somebody disconnects, someone leaves early, or just like the flow of the show changes. And now suddenly you have people mislabeled on the production side of things. And then that it just leads to this whole suite of problems, and it becomes this emergent issue. You have to deal with it. Because you don't want people, you don't want like your friends or whoever you're broadcasting with to have like misattributed names, right? Like if everyone saw my name here and they're like, wow, that Theo guy has a great interview podcast. Like everything we've done here is like wrong. So yeah, I mean, that has been the nightmare scenario on Twitch for a long time.
Yep. And beyond that, it's such an additional stress as the host to worry about all of these things. You're supposed to be hosting a show, and now you're hosting OBS. You're just in there constantly swapping things out. I was talking with moderators for a lot of these shows. Before I wrote a single line of code, I made a point to reach out to hosts of multi-person shows on Twitch. I wrote in like 2 days a very rough prototype of a video call app that you sign in with Twitch. It puts your Twitch name there instead, and it holds positions in the call, so you could screen capture it, throw it into OBS, and just like do a traditional like multi-person show like you would on Discord, but with better consistency and UI. I showed this to a few people, in particular Gunrun, and he just like, he looked at me and said, how much do I have to pay you to quit and work on this full time? Because we need this at the Shoujo for Iron Mouse, for Silver Veil, for Project Melody, and for all the collaborative content they wanted to do. Yeah. And my focus on high quality and low latency, because I built this for creators. We don't need to worry about 3G. We just want to pipe as many bits as you have to send and as you have to spare. When he saw the difference there and he realized he could remote chroma key and do like composition of anime avatars, he convinced me to build the product directly into OBS with the embed system. And here we are with awesome creators like Linus Tech Tips, obviously the Shoujo, the Majority Report, you guys at Redrop, and so many more using Ping to make incredible collaborative content.
Yeah, I mean, the ease of collaboration on Ping is awesome. And I didn't even, here's the thing. This is how I fucking know something's good, right? Is that it solves all these problems and like you don't even realize it, right? Like I was like, I wonder why I have to sign into this for Twitch with Twitch, but it's so obvious after you bring it up like that. Like now you have something that's purpose built with production in mind. And so no matter what you do, no matter who is involved, as long as they're signed in, everything will be okay.
It was also a huge safety thing for us too, where like one of the concerns we heard a lot was if a link leaks and somebody impersonates another user, like if you see Dr. Lupo from YouTube joins your call, or you see Theo from Twitch joins your call, you know it's actually them because they'd authenticate with their account. And that level of security was something we took super seriously. We wanted you to know when you hit accept in the corner, it's actually the person you're expecting.
My mind is blown. What a beautiful solution to so many problems. Talk a little bit more about the bitrate thing. You said like you could send as many bits as you've got and all this other stuff. And that was when Paul and I spoke about like initially using Ping for our production stuff. He was like rattling off a whole bunch of stuff. And then he said, and you can also send whatever bitrate you want or blah, blah, blah. And I was like, wait, what? Like we're not going to get like auto throttled and all this other stuff that happens, Discord or Google Meets, like call deterioration type stuff. What
How?
We're doing a lot of stuff differently here. So first and foremost, I want to say solutions like Google Meet, Zoom, Discord, they're all great. They do a lot of things really well. In particular, they lower the cost for one of these calls down so low that they can provide them for free. We cannot do that. There will not be a future where Ping is a free product if we want to maintain the quality levels that we're currently like aiming for, because we don't have like 5 to 10 servers in different clusters and different like regions. We have thousands of servers around the world interconnected with their own like terabit line. So each of us is connected to the server closest to us, and we can send as much data back and forth to that as you have the bandwidth for. And then those servers interconnect to do whatever they need. The two secrets we have are that network, the edge distributed network, as well as our multi encoding technology, where we send up two video encodings when your resolution is set over 480p. So I'm sending a 1080p video up right now, as well as a 360p 15fps interlaced video that you might be receiving in the call if you have it on like low bit rate mode or don't have turbo on or have me pinned. That allows each caller to receive a usable video in call without any latency, because we're not transcoding it on the server. We're just sending two videos up, and it allows for OBS to always have the highest quality possible thing.
So many questions. So what I love from a business perspective, and I bring this up a lot, is that streaming and live production on the internet, like live broadcasting online, is still an emergent industry. There are, and people are like, what are you talking about? It's been established, blah, blah, blah. So like industries that are established have products like you're talking about, and they also have service tiers, right? You have the free tier of the service. You have like step one, step two, enterprise level stuff, and then like custom built stuff. So you, in the streaming space, you have so much opportunity to grow all these different kinds of businesses, support-based businesses. If you look at someone else who's been on this podcast, has grown an incredible business, someone like PowerGPU, who is like, I want to make a company where I'm building PCs, but I'm also providing streamer-tailored support services. And that, like, that was a game changer, right? Because if you work anywhere else, you have a help desk to call. If something breaks on my monitor, I can call them. I can talk to a help desk. If something breaks on your stream, there's no streamer help desk. But now there is. So this idea that you have, you know, kind of flatly rejected the concept of like, we need to get this to free. Because I, having done this for like a decade, the free market is saturated on like streaming tools, right? Like any streaming tool, even merchandising creation, I feel like, there's someone out there who can do it to you. They're going to mess you up. They can do anything for you for free to low cost. So then it becomes, all right, well, what are these level one and level two services that people are going to look at and that they're going to pay for? And so Ping, you made this decision to say, well, no, we're going to be that kind of service provider. We're going to be the thing that takes what you're doing to the next level. And it's going to be worth the investment because of all of the ease of use that we're bringing to the table.
Yep. Couldn't have put it better myself. Adobe doesn't have a free tier. I don't see why we should if we want to meet the quality bars we want to meet. It was never really a question for us. Like, there's so many great free options. I think the little piece of spice I'll add is I've been watching the creator space for a long time now. I've been fascinated by all the different companies that keep popping up in the like new creator economy type stuff. The thing I've noticed is it feels like most of them aren't focused on existing creators and improving their workflows. They're more focused on people who haven't created before and helping them make their first video or go live for the first time, because the people building these things, that's where they're at. And their thought is, well, if creating was a little bit easier, maybe I would be a creator. I'm going to build the tool that would make me a creator. And then they realize creating's hard. They stop doing it, but now they're stuck running a company. And now they're trying to find a market for creators that don't exist, because if they did, they would already be creating. I think content creation is hard enough that better tools won't make a lot more creators, in the same way better ways to start a company don't make more founders. The hard part of starting a company isn't filing the documents, it's doing it every day. And the hard part of content creation isn't finding the right tools and learning them. That part is hard. But even if you do all that, go live for the first time, you realize doing that for 4 hours is hard too. It doesn't matter how good your tools are anymore.
Yeah. That's, you know, that's a really great perspective, because I've never heard it broken down like that, but you're right. I mean, there are a lot of people that, God, that's such a, going back to like understanding the problem, it's such a great succinct way to, I think, describe a lot of businesses that I've seen enter space. I'll shit on anybody that makes something bad. I've made plenty of bad stuff myself. So like, I never feel like bad about it, but like, you have just like a disproportionate amount of types of products that are like, oh, well, like we'll make this step in your stream. And so for me, after doing this for a while, people are like, oh, have you seen this brand new thing? And I'm like, I already got a thing for that. Like, oh no, I already have that. Like, I've been doing that for a long time. You know, and it's rare that I encounter software where I'm like, oh, like this is worth adding to the stack of things I use. Like the last time I picked up a piece of tech for my stream was when I got introduced to Caden from Make Echoes, and they have like an automated capture replay, like, you know, flow design thing. And even that is getting iterated on and improved on to the point where it's going to be, you know, like computer vision type stuff. And so I think that people that are focused on increasing value for folks that are already here are the ones that are going to be successful in the next generation of the creator economy, which I think we're starting. I mean, we're definitely starting to see that emerge out of, I don't even know, like the burning refuse of what's come before, right? Like we never in my life, if you told me, all right, we're going to, the whole of video consumption for human beings in over the course of like 2 years is going to go from this to this because of TikTok. And suddenly now vertical video is so prescient that you need to produce that first in a lot of cases. And that is never like, no, 2015, Ben would have been like, you're full shit. Not everybody's going to be shooting on their phone. So you have unexpected evolutions in the space. You have everybody, you know, trying to start businesses or take new approaches or like optimize their workflow and things like that. And I think it's going to be the companies that come in and say, you know, hey, for $15 or $20 or $100 or $200 a month, you can get 10 hours of your time back. Because ultimately, for me, that's what it is, right? You described that experience of watching a stream where a vast majority of it was just course correcting the graphics. And that's horrible. I mean, it's a terrible show. You feel like a piece of shit as a broadcaster when that stuff happens. And so you take time and stress, you give people time back and reduce the level of stress. It's always going to be like a winning combination. So what, what sort of magical things are coming to Ping in the future?
So a lot of our focus is an idea that we've touched on a bit here, which is producer efficiency. One of our like core beliefs at Ping is that there are a limited number of people who are interested and driven enough to do high quality content production and creation. And in a growing like video media world where the average company is spending $15,000 a year in the US on video production, the need for producers to make this high quality video is growing more and more. If we can build tools that allow producers to make video using live workflows that aren't necessarily live videos. So like what we're doing now, where this is being, we're using Ping, which is a live streamer tool, to record a video into OBS, which is a live streamer tool. Even though none of us are going live right now, we're recording this and we're going to throw this up on YouTube later. We're using these tools not because they are the perfect tool for VOD, but because they have the essence of live in them, which allows us to produce live and create content much more effectively without compromising on quality. It's our belief that producers like Paul running the show for us behind the scenes right now are actually going to take over what we currently see television studios doing. And our goal with Ping is to be the pipes for the remote TV studio, the same way that Ableton is the DAW for the remote music studio. We see the same transition happening in video, and we want to be at the forefront of it.
That is, again, I love... You have such clarity about how what you're building interoperates inside of the ecosystem. And I love anytime somebody, listen, if you want some advice from old Ben viewer, all right, anytime you're talking to a business owner and they can immediately step their product into existing ideas that happen in other industry verticals, you're talking to somebody who gets it. Like, you know, that's what I mean when I talk about like level one and level two paid tools, right? Like it's, you know, it used to take 50 people to run a camera, you know, or all of the cameras for movies. Now you can do it with a robot and like three guys, or one guy, depending on how well you pre-produce it. And that's the thing, is with how live everything is, the necessity of having pre-production or like semi-live production, or I don't know, like responsive production, where it comes from, as you beautifully put it, like the essence of live. Like if we can make everything as if it was a live stream and interact with it, then suddenly like all our content's pipelined out, all of our, you know, all of our audio, all of our video, any text that we might need to include, like all that stuff can be happening immediately. It's a big goal for us at Rare Drop, right? Like I want to be able to have Paul sit down and give him a suite of tools. He can sit down with our video editor and plan out what we want to capture, build out whatever the AI program is for the day, and then just record. And out of that, we have everything that we need. And that's, you know, that is where things are moving, because it's not going to be very much longer before the, you know, the production van that sits outside of the Super Bowl is just going to be like, you know, maybe it's more cost effective for everybody if we just put that guy, you know, he's just going to not leave his apartment in New York. They're all going to be on like a live Skype call and like produce it that way, because it just makes sense. When it comes to looking at live production and then considering the second focus of the problem, which is everything that is live has to be redistributed. You know, how did that play into what you built with Ping?
Really good question. I really like to think of the pipe of the creator journey, where we have the camera I'm looking at and talking into right now. The way I used to make YouTube videos, I would record onto my camera, I would take out that SD card, plug it into my computer, transcode the files, realize I was out of focus, unplug it, plug it back in, refocus, re-record, do the same, get it into my editor, realize, oh, I should have been left slightly so I had room on the right for a panel I want to put in. And you keep doing this over and over again until you eventually get an edited video recorded and transcoded and put on your hard drive that you can then upload to YouTube. Our goal is to make as much of that pipe live as possible, and we're already seeing that. A lot of the biggest creators are using OBS to be live from camera all the way to file on their computer. They do a tiny bit of touch-up editing and go straight to YouTube. We see a space right before OBS where a lot more could be happening that isn't right now. And we want to expand what OBS does, not by replacing it, not by like re-architecting it, but complementing its strengths with infrastructure and systems that allow you to turn OBS into a fully remote studio. Our goal is to, similar to how you framed it earlier with like, what tools do you add or not add? We saw so many companies trying to replace OBS and put it in the browser. OBS works. It's one of the few things that works. Why would we replace it when we could make it more powerful and effectively put the money that the infrastructure costs behind it that an open source project can't reasonably do? We're also OBS contributors, both code-wise and financially. We've been talking with the team a bunch. They're awesome. Huge shout out to the OBS team. They're the best. And I think that's what will make us stand out here. We are not trying to, like, we don't care how you go live from OBS or how you distribute the content from there. We trust you have solved that problem in a way you might not be happy with, but probably are, even more so than we could make. And if we're wrong, our creators will tell us that and we'll try and build solutions for it. But right now there's this space before OBS that is so full of pain that we want to resolve it. Dumb things like picking the same camera in your browser and in OBS causes both of them to go rainbow puke and for things to start crashing. We have a native app coming soon that's going to solve that problem. Even if you don't use Ping, you could use Discord and OBS together, and the free Ping camera app will help, because we want to solve the Windows problem so people can use Ping better. And if you want to use something else, go ahead.
That's, I love that. I wanted to circle back and talk about OBS, because it's very interesting to me, because OBS, which, you know, if you're not an industry person, that's open broadcast software. Why is it called that? Because it's completely open source. I have been using OBS since I started broadcasting in 2013. And I'm pretty sure it was like version 7. Like it was old, it was dirty. And I wouldn't dare touch OBS Studio. Like, no, I would only use like the mainline version of OBS back then that was like super friendly. Now we're on, let's see, I am on OBS version 27.2.3, and I'm on OBS Studio, which, you know, at first as a broadcaster, you're like, holy shit, why would I ever need all of these live production tools? And then after you've done it for about 5 years, you're like, why the fuck don't I have more tools in my OBS toolkit, right? And then you start hunting around. So what is it like working with, sorry, that was like a lot of context to get to the question. What is it like building something that's for product that's sort of scaffolding off of this like free open source tool? I know you already mentioned, you answered part of my question, like you work closely with them. Like you support them, you support the development of the project, which I think is great. And more than we can say for some other people in the space. I'm never not gonna say it. But it's very important when you're working with people who are distributing something for free and who are maintaining it for free, and it's essentially a community built piece of software, to work with those people appropriately. So I guess two questions then. One, I'd love to learn a little bit more about what that relationship is like. And then two, if you have any guidance for somebody who's listening to this and they're like, damn, like, I totally agree with them. Like right before OBS is a great opportunity for me to build some problem solving software. You know, what are the kind of steps that you would love to see other software devs in the space? You know, how do they get to the place where they're doing it the right way?
Really good question. I'm going to focus more on the general rather than us, because we're still very early in this. Like, our company was incorporated in September. We started building that relationship in January. Once we got like actual investment, we joined Y Combinator in January. So that helped a lot there. And as soon as we had money in our bank, I immediately started like distributing it to the open source projects that made Ping possible. I think it's super important to give back to the people whose shoulders we're standing on, to be frank. And yep. I've always been strong on that. I learned a lot from the general like software development space, similar to the trend that we're seeing in video production, where it goes from a 50 person team to a 2 to 3 person like show from a bedroom. We've totally seen the same in the software company world, where people can meaningfully compete with huge companies like Atlassian with a 4-person startup like Linear, or competing with, there's so many huge brands that have smaller companies like taking out ground from underneath them. Clubhouse is another great one. They were like 4 people when they blew up. And wow, that's because the tools that enable developers have continued getting better and building on top of an open source base that enables this all. Like Vercel is a company I look up to a lot. They're an open source adjacent web tech company that makes it as easy as possible to deploy your web service quickly. Just you link your GitHub and it does it for you. They build a lot of open source stuff, but they're entirely built on top of Linux, and Linux is entirely open source.
Yeah.
And all of the companies in this space, whether or not they're contributing back, they're all relying fully on this backbone. This is the thing I haven't seen in the creator space. It feels like everyone's kind of pretending OBS doesn't exist still. It reminds me of like the early 2000s and like when Linux started happening and people insisted, I could still run this on my Windows server. Feels like the same thing is happening in the creator world, where most of the companies and most of the people in the space haven't acknowledged the importance of the one big open source player, but that does seem to be shifting. I actually just saw Apple contributed like 15,000+ lines of code to OBS directly. Like Apple employees, unnamed because of the way Apple does things internally, just like a random GitHub account called like Apple Developer Network, dropped a huge PR on OBS that added video and screen capture on the new Apple native layer. So it's like way better screen capture than even Windows is capable of. because of new weird Mac architecture. But the fact that we're now in a world where Apple's contributing to OBS means that the industry is starting to acknowledge the standard that it is. And it's important for companies in the space to do the same. My argument would be this is actually a good land grab opportunity in a way, because everybody's yet to acknowledge this. And especially in the startup world, it's still kind of news that OBS is a thing you can build into. The fact that I can add a browser source in OBS and anything I can make for the web now works in OBS means it's very easy to build into and work with. And honestly, just experiment and build shit. That's what I always push. Like, if you make something interesting enough that you're going to see it through, the people who you're building on top of will see it too and be excited. The relationships happen when the stuff you're doing is cool. Don't focus on that too much. Just make sure you're open to the connection when it happens, because you'll be surprised at how much that, or how much you can get out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I will definitely say that the as long as you're paying attention, the connections materialize really quick. Like, you, it goes from being like, oh, I'm just a guy doing this thing. And then suddenly you'll get like the email from like the person who runs the project. And they're like, hey, saw what you're doing. Really like it. Let's have a meeting. And you're like, what? What are you talking about? You made a really strong comparison between OBS and Linux. And I wanted to explore that concept with you just a little bit more, since you're so well-versed in the space. Do you think that the foothold that OBS has is at that level where it's like,
firmly,
you know, there isn't going to be another open source, like there's not going to be another open source OS that everyone's going to build shit on. Like, it's going to be Linux, right? Like, so you think OBS is at that place where like trying to build a freeware competitor is just like, unless it's niche, because like, I know that I do like some of the browser based stuff for the compatibility that you can get with, you know, like lighter setups, simple, like places where you don't have a host of technology that you can kind of feed into it. And I also realize that as time goes on, eventually that won't matter. So I definitely think, like, I love that there are some alternative solutions, but, you know, so you'd say it is your opinion that like OBS is monolithic at this point. I mean, Apple contributing all that code
in the same sense that Linux is monolithic, yes, but I think the strength of monolith or of Linux is in its philosophy more than just the technology. Like, the Linux and the core idea of the Unix philosophy, which is building a box that has an input and output that's clear, so you can assemble those boxes together to make software out of them. In a lot of ways, ping is one of those boxes. It's a video call as input, and it's individual streams that you can use to do whatever as output. But it's very clear what role ping serves in your production chain. And OBS is a huge like chunk of that chain. Linux is one part of your OS. There's the joke, it's like, it's not Linux, it's GNU/Linux, because Linux is just this one piece at the core. It's a very important piece, but it is just one part. And the philosophy of how it recommends assembling the parts on top is what's so powerful there. I think OBS is very similar in that sense, where it's one part of your production flow, but it encourages certain patterns, like using browser sources, using layers and scenes, using like individual tracks. And by providing all of these in its primitive form, it enables us as creators to assemble our own piecemeal tool chains on top. And that's going to be really hard to compete with, because everybody's already building tools that work with OBS. And that's why we even see TikTok making their TikTok Live Studio just an OBS wrapper.
Right. I love the way that you describe that, because it also perfectly answers a question that I get all the time as a broadcaster. It's impossible to answer, which is like, how do you do your audio? You could talk to 10 different fucking people, and they are going to have 10 different audio routing solutions for you, because they, I'm so used to being able to like grab a camera and show people shit. Like, this is when I would love to grab my camera, but like in front of me, right, I have 4 monitors. I have a Stream Deck. I have a Go XLR. I have 2 PCs that are routed together uniquely, right? Everybody, like even the way people run game capture and game capture audio can be unique. You can do software routing. You can do a combination of software, hardware routing. You could do all hardware routing. I've learned that I have a very weird audio routing system, because I'm like, oh yeah, you just do this, this, and this. And trying to help somebody troubleshoot on stream and they'll go, I'm sorry, how the fuck does your OBS work? Like, you know, how does that work for you? Because my system's like that. And it is because OBS encourages you to get in there and explore with, like you said, the primitive setup, the very basic of like, here's the audios, here are your layers, here are your audio inputs and outputs. And then you go in and say, well, I need these three inputs. And there's no, I mean, you could watch a guide maybe, but like it really encourages you to kind of jump in there and just start messing around. And so before you know it, you have your own relationship with the software and how you use it for your production flow, which may or may not translate to other people. Which now that I say that out loud, that kind of adds a layer of complexity for people who are trying to come in and solve problems like yourself. So how do you deal with the absolute clown show that is how everybody's setups on OBS are so completely different, right? Like I feel like that's a really, that would give me pause. It would make me feel like I'm not really sure I can solve this problem. So, you know, was that ever intimidating for you? The fact Incredibly. That everybody does things so differently.
Still is. One of the like most fun tests we did for this was when you copy and embed from Ping. So it's like you take a person, you drop them in your OBS as a browser source. By default, we don't enable audio, but we let you choose if you want the browser source to route audio separately. So you're choosing, do I want desktop audio or do I want direct Ping audio in the browser source in OBS? It's straight up 50-50 which people use. Like, I thought that it would
be
like,
that's
clearly
wild.
People would go one way or the other, but everyone's doing their shit different, and we gotta let them. So our philosophy here is, to take a step back, like, my belief is that the way OBS thinks about this is they build primitives, not opinions. OBS is generally unopinionated, and it gives you these building blocks with the way their audio routing works, the way their scenes and layers and sources work, the way that their, like, filter system is as extensible as it is. It's built to not tell you how to do these things, but give you the blocks to assemble your workflow with. So we at Ping try to provide a similar philosophy with our building blocks, where we're not going to tell you add OBS or add Ping to OBS this way, because that might not work with your workflow. We have recommendations, and through those recommendations, we often introduce people to do workflows and ways to use OBS that they didn't know about that they end up getting hyped on. But we make sure that with everything we build, it's built in a way where you can assemble it how you choose. Like, a lot of users are really dedicated to screen capture and not individually placing users. They just want to capture everyone in the call. So we have a full screen embed option that you can open up and then screen capture that directly the way you usually do. We try to make the best, how do I put it? Like, methods out for... That's not right to put it. We try to make the primitives that allow you to make those decisions based on what you think is best and what you're already doing, rather than encoding our opinions into our solutions.
Yeah, no, that was my takeaway from what you were saying, right? Like, so you needed to make sure that when you are developing this, you keep that sort of same open philosophy where it's like, okay, well, the OBS doesn't tell the end user how to do this. So we need to make sure that we can accommodate all of the different ways the end user can get to this point. Because if we don't, it's not like, for example, like the desktop audio checkbox, if that didn't exist, 50% of the people who tried Ping would go, nah, this, I don't want to use it. Like, it doesn't work for me. And there are so many tiny things like that with OBS. So the development strategy that you all took was like, okay, this is how Big Papa OBS does it. So this is how we need to kind of continue the conversation for folks as we develop. Paul was right. This is super fascinating to me. I'm like, I'm all week. If you don't know, chat, because I'm used to do this live and I just got done streaming. If you don't know, if you're listening, you know, Paul has been doing an excellent job getting really incredible people on the show. And he always gives me like a little brief, like, you're really going to like this. And I'm always incredulous because that's who I am. I'm like, I don't know. But this has been like, this is truly fascinating to get into all of this stuff, because when you're, you know, at Rare Drop, when we're trying to solve a problem for a charity for fundraising, it it involves sort of taking this approach of like, we really have to leave the door open for a long time until they walk through, because it's important to see how they approach the problem. Because if we don't see how they as a charity are going to approach live streaming, the advice we give them might be bad, right? Like if somebody's going to jump in with both feet and they're like, oh yeah, we already hired like a gaming influencer manager, we already hired all these people, and that charity's ready. Okay, cool. So like, let's start with outreach. Let's do this. Let's get these people. Let's build you assets. But if, you know, that's completely different than somebody who thinks they know what's going on and then walks in the door and they're like, oh, I've never streamed before and my grandson plays Twitch. And they say something like that. And so you have to start at a different place to solve those problems. And so seeing that sort of attention to detail to the broadcaster's experience that says, however you're going to walk into using our product, we want the door to be open for you. We want you to make the decision about how you're going to route your audio, how you're going to embed the video. I don't know if I could be more impressed, honestly. Like,
I think this thought a step further, actually. Sorry to interrupt, but
Please do.
I think there's a really interesting thing we learned early, is that when you build good primitives, you don't know what the use cases are. Like, yes, there are those like less familiar users, like the grandpa whose grandson used a Twitch once, but
yeah.
For each one of them, there's also like, one dude we talked to early, he like looked like a grandfather that was wearing like a fancy suit and everything in the call. Turned out he was behind the scenes for tech for Magic the Gathering, is a hardcore Discord user than even I, and knows the space super well and wanted to use Ping for remote production. And we keep meeting people like that, like Paul, who pushed the product well past what we thought it would be used for. I built this to let a host of a live stream bring on 2 to 15 guests with their names on their video. And immediately the first user of the product was Gunrun going live for like remote anime composition using like VShoujo assets and anime avatars. Now we have creators like Nicotine over at Transmission Gaming who uses Ping to recreate Star Trek live with like 8 guests, over 1500 scenes in her OBS, creating a full dynamic show using our product. And I had never thought of any of these things when we built Ping. But when you build good primitives, you built something that you don't have to think about the use cases as much for, because the users can take that primitive and invent things you never would have imagined.
That's awesome. I have another question then. Do you feel like developing good software in this space is sort of like creating a new color of paint? Like,
yes,
you're like, color of paint. Yeah, like the people need this green, and you have no idea how they're going to use it.
Yes,
that's so cool.
Absolutely, it's more like creating a new material, like a new type of plastic or a new type of like coating, like, and thinking people are going to use it to make a new water bottle, but they end up making a new type of housing with it. It's like, what the hell? I did not expect that in the slightest.
Yeah, like 3D printing houses. You're like, these 3D printers are cool, and somebody's like, why don't we do a house? And you're like, that's not what I. Okay. Not what I intended at the beginning. Time has flown by today. So we're getting close to the end. So I guess I have probably like one more question. If you had any advice for somebody who's listening to this and they are like, wow, I get it now. Where would you recommend somebody start if they want to start building an effective tool to make OBS better or to improve the broadcaster experience?
Have the problem first. Like, I learned so much from going live and bringing guests on my own show using a product I had just started, and ran into every issue that our first users had, they told me about, that I didn't really understand. Like, the best advantage you can have, and this is like what Y Combinator, the like startup like incubator, really beats into you. You have to understand the users and the pain points. The best way to do that is to be the user with the pain point. If you can't do that for some reason, then you need to be spending 8 hours a day talking to them. I'm doing both right now, which is really nice. But like, yeah. I go live every Wednesday. I pull like 200 to 400 viewers now, just doing code stuff live. But that alone was enough for me to really start feeling the pain points I was building for. And it's so much easier to build when you have a reason why. When you're building for the sake of building is a fun way to learn, but it's not going to motivate you through the hard parts. Just like streaming, building a company, building software, solving problems is hard. And intrinsic motivation is great and all, but I firmly believe you need something more to do the hard stuff and to really like grow through the pain. And you have that, or I think the best way to get that is through having the problem and caring enough to solve it. So for me, I didn't want to be an engineer until I had to be for my Minecraft server when I was 16. And now I'm running a company. But that was because the things I wanted forced me down this path, not because I wanted to build for the sake of it.
Wow. Have the problem first is probably one of the coolest pieces of advice I've ever heard when it comes to solving a problem.
If you wouldn't be happier if somebody else said, hey, I built this already, you can use it. If that, like right now, if somebody came up to me and said, hey, we actually already built everything you want to do with Ping, here it is, I'd be pumped. I would end everything and go start something else for another problem that people have. But the reality is these aren't solved problems and I need this to exist. So that's why it exists. If you wouldn't be happier being handed a solution that works, then you're not doing it for the right reasons.
I really like this conversation, Theo. This has been absolutely phenomenal. So that was great. Now we are at the end of the show and I will hand the floor over to you. If there is anything that is coming up soon with Ping, if there's anything that you want to promote, if you want to give every broadcaster listening your elevator pitch about why they need to be using Ping, whatever you want, the floor is yours.
I really appreciate it. So TLDR, we built Zoom for streamers, makes it way easier to bring guests and other like people onto your content, copy paste them directly into OBS at the highest possible quality. We have awesome creators like Linus Tech Tips, VShojo, Elgato, the company, Obsidian, and so many more using our tech. I personally am as involved as I can be with every user. If you have a problem, you can actually DM me directly and I'll probably hop directly onto it. If you want to make your shows look as good as they are and make it show the effort you're putting in, really proud of what we built and I would love to help you out. We don't have any particular like events coming up. We do run an office hours in the Discord server every Friday at around 1 p.m. PST. You can join that at ping.gg/discord. If you want to hear me rant about all sorts of startup stuff, you can watch me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Theo, or on Twitter, t3.gg. Thank you guys so much. Oh, we will be at GCX, so that'll be a cool place to chat. I personally won't be there, but the rest of the team will have Bryn and Adam both there. Really excited to have them there.
We are excited to have you at GCX. That's going to be a good, it's going to be a good time. If you're listening to this podcast, first of all, thank you very much. If you want to rate and subscribe, that's cool. But more importantly, if you heard anything today and you thought of somebody, please share this podcast with them. The whole reason that we do this is to share wonderful knowledge and information with everybody. I don't know everything. I just learned a shit ton of stuff today. If you have anyone in your family that's a software engineer, an engineer of any type, or they're trying to build a business, this is an excellent podcast for them to listen to. And if you're a broadcaster and you want to, you know, listen, you're like, oh, my friend does this. This is one of the best for broadcasters podcasts I think we've ever done. So that's
one
my
last
pitch.
Hot take.
Yes.
Being a content creator and being a business creator have such a strange overlap. It's the exact same mindset. Like being successful on here and being successful, like running a business, exact same grind. I have so much respect for creators. Y'all work way harder than you think. And what you do is just as hard, if not harder, than what I'm doing here.
Thank you from me. And see, share it with somebody. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for watching, if you're watching. And from everybody here at the Broman Show, have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. Bye, everyone. So much. Really appreciate it. Peace, y'all.